This episode is an exclusive insight into the views of the Elgium investment team on what's happening in markets and what this means for investors. This podcast is intended for investment professionals, and if you're enjoying Elgium Talks, why not subscribe in your Apple Podcasts or Spotify app and never miss another episode.
Hello and welcome to the CIO Market Update from Elgium. I'm Max Julius, Head of Content, and I'm delighted to be joined by Sonia Loud, CIO, and Emil van den Heiligenberg, Head of Asset Allocation. We should be joined imminently by Madeline King, Co-Head of Investment Grade Research, but if she doesn't join us in the next few minutes, we will have a very able replacement and understudy. Now, we all meet virtually today after we've just published our latest CIO Outlook, which offers answers to a whole gamut of questions for investors raised by the pandemic and the broader upheaval we've witnessed in recent months. Sonia, in addition to your regular markets and macro updates, could you please walk us through Elgium's current thinking on the prospects for the global economy as outlined in the document?
Thank you very much, Max. Yes, I would be delighted to do so, and a very warm welcome to everyone. As always, I hope you're joining us healthy and safe. Unfortunately, I think 30 minutes might not necessarily be enough to walk you through the whole document, but literally the calls that we have been doing ever since the onset of the lockdown and the pandemic are a very good reflection on our thinking, and I'm particularly pleased that Emil is joining us today to share with you how most of these thoughts will be reflected in the asset allocation context. As you know, we are always trying to make sure that we have a full understanding of the current environment, while at the same time already thinking about longer-term themes. And again, Madeline obviously has done a lot of work around fallen angels, where we have then added, in addition to the usual default mechanisms, our understanding of the thematic drivers that might see a huge differentiation across sectors and across companies. So a lot for us to talk about, and as I said, probably not necessarily enough for today's call, but we will cover most of these over subsequent calls, and I would obviously highly encourage to read the CIO Outlook in full. As usual, I would like to run through a bit of the current setup on what's been happening, because since the last call, which is now 2 weeks ago, we have had quite a number of notable events happening. One is that the S&P 500, actually earlier this week, managed to erase all the losses of this year and to briefly touch positive territory, which has since obviously returned course, and we are slightly negative again. And we should not forget that the Nasdaq is at an all-time high. And I know that this is raising question marks, because clearly the economic data that is still coming in looks quite dreadful, and hence there's lots of questions around what are we making of this current setup? Is it sustainable, and how should we think about this? We have had the Fed last night, and one sentence I would highlight already is the fact that they are not even thinking about higher rates. So a very strong statement coming from Powell last night from the U.S. that we need to examine. But I would start with the virus update and a few thoughts on what is happening, because, as you know, we have squarely moved into the second phase of the pandemic. We are now talking a lot more around when, how, and how to manage the easing of restrictions, how to think about the threats of a second wave, and governments around the world are obviously very much focused on reassuring their citizens that all is in hand in terms of getting back to some sort of normality. While we're doing this and looking at the slide that is in front of you right now, we should not forget that on a global basis, daily cases are still rising, and that although the darker blue lines are now fading, which is the developed markets pandemic curve, you see very clearly that emerging markets has taken over, and that combined, we're still looking at a daily increase of cases. So it's not yet the all clear on a global basis, and we still need to wait and see how this is developing. We've talked about the emerging markets a lot, and again, just a reminder that although the actual numbers of new infected cases is still rising, and it's rising quite dramatically, emerging markets on average are still experiencing a much better fatality rate, simply because most of these countries have a much younger average population. And as such, we see that the countries, although similarly impacted in terms of the cases, are not seeing the same rate in terms of fatalities. And as such, we are seeing an easier stance toward, towards restrictions and lockdown, and hence we might see a different economic impact across emerging markets. Now, we have studied as well the efficiency of lockdown measures, and we are, I think, expecting and experiencing right now that although you can see that most countries have been very strict in imposing lockdown measures, particularly when we look at our own experience here, it is clear that coming out of lockdown is not as clear than the entering into it. And it will be very interesting to see in hindsight, unfortunately, who has been most successful on either side of those lockdown measures. Now, moving on to talk about the economic side, because again, having already given you a slight teaser around the Fed, it's very clear that the economic forecasts, again, are changing relatively quickly, and we have a lot more data points now that allow us to judge on how the economic reality actually fits versus our scenarios. As always, as you can see on the current slide, it is scenario one that we believe currently is the most likely. And just as a reminder, the difference between scenario one and scenario two is mostly linked to a second wave experience. And you see from the last bullet point on both scenarios, that obviously means that economies take a lot longer to recover and to go back to their output potential that they had prior to COVID-19. So the difference is a second wave and the potential reimposing of lockdown measures. Currently, it's very clear, we have established a model to track the current growth dynamics, and you will not be able to quite see it, but the green line is our growth tracker, and that currently sits squarely underneath our blue line, the darker blue line, which is scenario one. So for the time being, it seems that the easing of restrictions is successful and that hence economies can return to more normal. And as you can see from this picture as well, it looks more like a V than anything else. But we've always said scenario one and scenario two initially will look the same because it's the outer quarters that will make the difference as they depend on a potential second wave. What is interesting is that the Fed last night not only told us that that they are not even thinking about hiking rates, they're actually been quite moderate in their outlook as well. So they do not see, based on their own assumptions, that there's any rate hikes before the end of 2022. They do not see core inflation above target until 2022, which obviously coincides with their rate assumption. So that was very interesting. They do see unemployment actually to remain elevated. It's 10% for this year, 6.5% for next year. And that kind of tells you already that they might see more economic scarring and hence overall are probably closer to our scenario two path than the scenario one path. And they actually believe that the economy will fail to recover their output by the end of 2021 and will only see this by the end of 2022. So very interesting, slightly more pessimistic maybe, and mostly linked to the understanding of potential economic scarring. And hence, this having this growth tracker and that the economics team has established is very useful to look at short-term indicators on when we might see a deviation, because for the time being, it's squarely on track to follow that darker blue line. So a lot of interesting insights here. And obviously one big question that always has been coming up, and as you might recall, Chris Jeffrey has discussed in greater detail, is the one around inflation. As I just highlighted, the Fed seems quite sanguine in their outlook for inflation, and it's clear that the immediate impact is deflationary because it's a massive demand shock that is hitting the economy, and hence we have obviously seen prices and price levels react accordingly, as you can see on the current slide. Now, longer term, we have to balance this, because it's very clear that we're currently witnessing an explosion in monetary growth. And as such, you know, eventually there will be the tipping point with the economy recovering, and hence, obviously, those prices recovering as well. The Fed seems to believe that this is definitely not a story until 2022, but it's one to watch, because clearly this would be incredibly important for bond markets. Now, coming back closer to home, we've talked a lot about the enormous amounts of stimulus that governments and central banks have been provided. And I believe that Europe in particular has received a lot of attention, not only because of the size of the ECB program and the size of the program that Ursula von der Leyen has announced, but obviously has received a lot of attention because of the mix between grants and loans, and that for a first time, actually, there's a large part of grants within the program. And we have spent quite a lot of time to look at actually on who might be the real beneficiaries of this recovery fund. And it's obviously very clear where potentially opposition will come from and where a lot of support will come from. But I think we all agree that in terms of the symbolism and in terms of size, this is a very comprehensive program and a very comprehensive support setup. And hopefully, if this is implemented the way it's intended to, and actually with quite a strong emphasis on a green recovery, this clearly would put Europe in a much better position. And I think it's fair to say that particularly the French-German announcement has surprised markets positively. As we've highlighted a couple of times, we obviously have other topics that have resurfaced given that they were put on the back burner during the immediate focus on COVID-19. But it's very clear that the US-China relations are resurfacing quite negatively. And we've had a lot of back and forth around the developments here. And it's very clear that this will be a major topic across the US elections. And so we have to wait and see how this is panning out. Now, with that in mind, obviously, I would like to come back how I started, because it seems that equity markets in particular and other risk assets like credit so far seem to think that the backdrop is in fact very benign. We obviously have heard the Fed again, which has signaled that the support will remain in place for a long period of time. We have seen the economic indicators that point towards a V-shaped recovery, and so it is obviously the justification for why equity markets have done so well. But quite rightly, the big question mark is, what's next? And is that not probably too far, too fast against the high level of uncertainty that we are facing? And I'm not taking any further away from what Emil is going to tell you, because he will share a lot of thoughts around what are we making of that status quo of the current picture, and how are we implementing this across our portfolios. Back to you, Max.
Thank you very much for that update, Sonia. Yes, let's move to Emil now. Emil, can you please build on Sonia's remarks about the macro, our core macro view, and the key asset allocation implications?
And before we go into asset implications, I think it's fair to be transparent. In this market update 5 weeks ago, already back then, we believed that there's too much optimism already priced. I have to admit, since that call, equity markets obviously have rallied. Yesterday, another 10%. Today, sort of, it's close to 8. So we need to be humble and acknowledge how difficult it is in predicting turning points in these fast-moving markets. Having said that, the overall strategy, the barbell strategy approach, I hope people remember, which was short equities but long credits, long technology stocks, and long laggards. So equity sectors which were neglected, like value and small caps, have done really, really well over that period. In my view, that teaches us two things. So one, it's very difficult to get every single call right, and it's way more important to get the majority of the calls right. And second, investors are constantly have to balance their portfolios between risk and opportunity. As you can see, markets can swing from opportunity to risk in the blink of an eye, as we see, for instance, evident today as well. Our positioning going forward, a bit boring perhaps, but the overall strategy hasn't really changed. We remain cautious on equities. We continue to believe that a lot of optimism is priced on the economy, on the virus, on the potential development of a vaccine, and on the economic scarring, which we undoubtedly will see in 6 months' time as the result of lockdowns. You have to think about defaults, quite significant cost-cutting by companies, which leads to, in a way, layoffs, a rising unemployment, and a cut-down of CapEx plans. Now, as we already alluded to, the reopening of economies seem to be proceeding a little faster than we expected six weeks ago. I look at the growth tracker from Tim, which Sonia discussed. That green line is probably closer to scenario one than to scenario two, and we, to be honest, would have expected sort of that kind of scenario. But I also want to emphasize, and Sonia did that as well already, is you are in a V or in a W scenario, the data will improve in both scenarios when the economies start to reopen. There is just a lot of pent-up demand. There's a lot of enthusiasm to start consuming again, and that will sort of boost economic numbers. It's not important what's going to happen in the next 6 to 8 weeks. It's way what's going to happen sort of in the last months of the year, which determines the final outcome of equity markets. I think one of the client questions was, do we believe there is a disconnect between market pricing and the real economy? And I think it's clear from my view that I hope it's clear that yes, that we do believe that. We actually think that it's mainly a disconnect between earnings and markets. And when we take the economist scenarios and put them into our earnings models, then we need to put quite aggressive assumptions in there to justify current levels of equity markets. We believe peak trough earnings will fall by about 40%. And markets are definitely not pricing this in our view. Sure, markets will probably look through a sort of peak to trough earnings dynamic because, everyone also expects with the economy rebounding that earnings will rebound quite fast in 2021 as well. But even then, if we plot 2021 earnings, so the drawdown in earnings and the rally in earnings, we still think that markets are quite expensive on that metrics as well. So we remain that outright equities that markets have gone too far, and we remain actually positive on the other trades I mentioned in the beginning as well. So positive technology, it's a winning sector post-corona, it's a winning sector in a low-growth environment, and it's a winning sector in a political environment where technology will become a strategic industry for individual countries and power blocks. We think the laggards will have further to run, but we have taken some profits on credits as spreads have contracted massively in the past weeks, and we consider the risk-reward in credits now a bit more normal than it was 5-6 weeks ago. Some new ideas we've taken in the portfolio. We think rates will go up from current very low levels. The fear of negative yields in the US and the UK, we think, is overdone. Supply of government issuance will outweigh, in the end, the support of central banks. And inflation expectations, although in the long run, will rise in the light of the policy experiment, which we see left, right, and center, and which is very close to helicopter-like money. We like buying inflation in the US, less so in the UK, as the UK market is expensive in our view, given the LDI demand, which we've seen. And finally, a little bit of an inflation protection is we like gold as well. That's it, Max. Over back to you.
Thank you, Emil, for being so open about the challenges and opportunities presented by these markets. It doesn't look like either Madeline or Ben are going to join us right now. So why don't I come back to you, Emil, with another question we've received from a client, and then I'll go back to Sonia to sum up. So this question is the 60-40 equity bond asset allocation model no longer viable?
Yeah, great question. There are a few elements on this to ask this question, which I hope people on the call will find interesting. First of all, we never believed that a pure 60-40 equity bond portfolio was a suitable investment, even before the recent market shock. And portfolios are not well diversified, and usually those traditional balanced portfolios carry a large home bias, which we think is inappropriate. We believe that diversification is actually one of the sort of few free lunches in markets which investors should explore. So people who know us, we run a very diversified portfolios with a relatively high weight in alternative assets like alternative credits, emerging market debt, high yield, but also real estate and infrastructure. In that, we benefit greatly from our colleagues from the index management team because they help us to generate cost-efficient, diversified investment opportunities which allow our multi-asset portfolios to a high degree. But the question might be related to the level of interest rate, and we have seen the end of the market. The main factor of the global crisis and the reason Corona sell-off of one of the yields dropped significantly, and there's a large which has even negative nominal yields. I think, many countries in Europe. So far, multi-asset funds have always benefited from the negative correlation between equities and bonds. If you would hold both, you have a very well diversified portfolio, and bonds provide crash protection. Because central banks in a crisis cut rates aggressively. This is no longer a certain, not that central banks won't react, I'm a firm believer in that, but with negative yields, you must ask yourself the question whether bonds can fulfill the same role in portfolios. So Ben written in the CIO outlook whether under the title, is this the end of the bond bull market? And he concludes that one path leads to higher rates and inflation. So it's not probably the main scenario, but sort of the range of probable outcomes for interest rates has definitely widened a lot. We agree with Ben, and we actually have a short duration position on at the moment as a medium term and a tactical trade. But it doesn't mean that we are suddenly in a world where we go away from the low yield environment which we have seen before. We still have an aging population. We still have a massive amount of debt. We still have a world which actually cannot afford higher yields. And central banks are becoming increasingly activist, as that's the whole principle of helicopter money in a way. So bonds provide some diversification, but probably less diversification and less downside protection. For example, in the beginning of the year, German yields fell 60 basis points, so from minus 20 to minus 80 in the crisis. In the global financial crisis in 2000, bond yields dropped about 160 basis points. So you can see that the crash, given the low level of yields of bonds, is decreasing. Now, how do you respond to that, and how do investors respond to that? Because it was it was such a great combination, bonds protecting equity risk. And we are spending a lot of research capacity at the moment to think about that. Let me first start off that question with a warning, which is there is no panacea. There is not a clear solution of something which has a positive expected return and hedges equity risk as well as bonds do. Things we are considering is a range of options. First is to squeeze every yield out of the development market, bond market, and go to areas where yields are still a bit higher and where curves are generally steep, like the US, like Australia. Then high quality credits, corporate credits might help, because you have a higher yield, and therefore the negative holding cost or the flat holding, zero holding return isn't the problem which you have in government bonds. And you can argue that spreads of these bonds will not widen that much in a crisis, so they could form some kind of protection. Then we think that considering option protection plans of programs for the equity position makes more sense in a very low yield environment as well. Our solutions team has done great research on this, so if clients are interesting, contact your salesperson. But I think that's really great work from the solutions team. And then further squeeze out the benefits in diversification as a last point. Targeted Forex exposure, so dollar and yen give pound investors diversification also in a crash environment. Further diversification in, for instance, frontier equities or Timberland RIDs. And lastly, something which we are researching at the moment, can you build a defensive equity portfolio which has a stable dividend yield and has a reasonable protection in a crisis environment?
Emil, thank you. That's great. I'm conscious of the time right now, but thank you for talking through those shifting dynamics. Let's go back to Sonia now to sum up. Sonia, are there any other key themes that emerge in the CIO outlook that you'd like to highlight now? And is there anything else you'd like to add before we finish up this morning?
Yes, thank you very much, Max. And I think it's worth highlighting that the CIO outlook, alongside with the calls that we have been doing, is really trying to provide you with insights into exactly what Emil has just highlighted. It's the understanding that as every crisis, this crisis as well, will have a balanced kind of risk and opportunity profile when it comes to market investing. And so it is not just about, you know, hedging the risk, it's identifying the opportunities as well. And what the CIO outlook is doing is really allowing some insights into where we do see opportunities, because it's very clear that there is a lot of change underway. Some will be more long-term, and the Fed seems to believe that we are right in that in terms of the long-term scarring. There will be changes in our consumer behavior. There will be changes in the way companies, you know, will have to look at their own balance sheet strengths and obviously the debt levels they're taking on. We've talked about, obviously, the level of interest rates, the discussion around negative rates. There's a lot going on that is impacting long-term, you know, return profiles of asset classes. And I think what we have highlighted a number of times is the focus on the opportunity set. But as Madeline so very clearly highlights in her piece in the CIO Outlook, avoiding defaults is a big part of that opportunity upside set, because if you can manage to avoid those downgrades, then this is a big part of your return contribution. Likewise, we have had Woody on the call and Eric to talk about emerging markets. There's another piece highlighting the opportunities that we're seeing there. But I would like to finish that this is no longer a simple beta exposure call. And I think this was very clear the way Emil has highlighted there. Current thinking. It is the understanding of more selective opportunities, of which believes that there are quite a few. There is laggards, there is areas that structurally will come out of this stronger than they enter it, but it's about identifying it. So it is the active part of that selection process that we believe is far more important. And obviously, and this is why we are continuously bringing back the slides around the virus and the economy, understanding on how the risks will develop, i.e. a potential second wave, the economic indicators and the growth tracker to see very, you know, near term or literally real time on what is changing and what's happening. And so we will continue, obviously, with our calls every 2 weeks. But I believe the written CIO snapshot and the market update is a really neat summary of all of these topics in one piece.
Well, that's a great point on which to end this week's call. I'd like to thank you, Sonia and Emil, for your time today. I'd like to thank our clients for logging in. Yes, if you haven't already received the CIO Outlook, you can find it on our website, and it's also in the show notes for our podcast listeners. We'll be back again in 2 weeks' time when Sonia will be joined by Bill Hughes and Tim Dougal.
If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous on the Apple Podcasts app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookouts for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of recording and do not reflect the views of Legal & General Investment Management. Legal & General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. And remember to share this podcast with your investment professional friends, colleagues, or even family members. And to find more great content from Legal & General Investment Management, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website.